Well, go ahead and open your Bibles to Luke 18. So we're kicking off a 2 week study. I'm trying to pair these parables, no pun intended, together in likeness. But we're going to look at this week and next week two parables on prayer, and they're quite different, but they are involved with prayer, and I think you'll find them very exciting. Cable television tycoon Ted Turner. Everybody's heard about Ted Turner and his opposing to Christianity. And I found this. This was interesting. He was at a banquet in Florida in 1990. And, you know, he's always been critical of any fundamental Christianity. He says he doesn't believe. But listen to the quote that he gave there. He said, Turner said that he had a strict Christian upbringing and at one time considered becoming a missionary. He said, I was saved 7 or 8 times. He said the newspaper quoted him as saying, but he said that he became disenchanted with Christianity after his sister died, despite his repeated prayers. So I think we've all, whoever we are, have spent time praying for something that didn't happen or hadn't happened. I don't think anyone's past that. Struggling sometimes with that can be difficult. I had a real good friend of mine that I worked with at Unilever that his daughter came down with Wilson's disease. And she had a couple of liver transplants and eventually passed away. And I had a hard time with that. And I said, you know, I thought, wow, you know, here is something I prayed for, what I thought really, really hard. And here's a good Christian girl and she passed away.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I always, excuse me when you mentioned that, I think a good example for me, and I think about it at times when all the people in here may remember that was Sandra Gunn. Mm-hmm. I remember Sandra Gunn coming down to the church about like Adeline, coming down to church several times and us going down there. And I'm talking about the whole church. Remember that, don't you, Jeff? And we prayed for her. And Sandra was about a good or better person than I've ever known in your life. Man, if anybody's.
Renee Morris.
I was going to say next. I remember praying for her.
Renee Morris. Yeah.
But you know, I had somebody tell me once that God always chooses the prettiest flowers.
David's sister, he had a sister that died a year before we came here, and she was like Sandra. She was young, I mean, she was only 22, but she was such a godly young girl. And she said, "If I can have any influence on anybody that watches me go through this, I'm okay with it." I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And I think that Sandra, look what she left behind.
I know. Well, I always think of this. I saw Sandra probably a couple of days before she died. She was in a real weak state. And I went up to see her, and Linda didn't go because Linda was real sick with a cold. And Linda didn't go. And I went in with Freddie and we went and said, it was probably a day or two before she passed away. And she spent most of her time was in there talking about Linda being sick, how she hope and even prayed in there for Linda's help. And there she is.
It's amazing. I mean, I think God uses people. We went to see John Boatwright when he was at the VA, when he was dying. And he prayed for us.
You know, and we've had those prayers. Yeah. We've prayed, you know, people, I mean, I can make the list, you know, you pray for a solid marriage and something happens.
Yeah.
Finances, and you still go through financial struggles, you know, it's unending on that. And we've all struggled with that. We've all, I think if there's anything, and I'll use this term, I don't use this term lightly, but for the lack of a better term, if there's anything that would tempt our faith, it may be prayers that we feel that should be answered a certain way that's not. And I don't say that lightly either.
That's what that parable's about, really.
Yeah. And so, and again, we're not alone. Jesus knew that his disciples would be tempted to quit praying after he left. And you know, there was a lot of struggles that the disciples had once they understood that Jesus was coming back. And a lot of early Christians thought, okay, I'm coming back, like he's coming back like next week, or he's only going to be gone for just a couple of weeks or a couple of months or a couple of years. And it just, obviously that was 2000 years ago. Right. And he had just in chapter 17, he had just talked to the disciples about his return, and he told them he's going to be gone a while. You know, he said, I'm going to be gone a while, but I'll be back. And he talked about the coming of the kingdom. And we're kind of living in that between times now as such. You know, we face trouble, we face opposition, adversity, you know, it. And I think Jesus knew without a doubt that we would have these struggles. And as we go through, if you Google this and look at a lot of comments on this, surprisingly, one of the big comments was, and I think this was by a lot of non-believers, is why do we have to pray at all? If God is all-knowing, omniscient, if God's all-knowing, then why do we have to pray at all?
Obedience.
We have a relationship.
I was going to say, that's what it's all about, is our relationship.
That's one of the first questions I ever asked Joan early on in my Christian walk, and that's the answer she gave me.
So if prayer does that, and we know what the result of prayer is, really in our life, more so than the people we're praying for when we're praying for other people, what in that or how in that keeps us from bailing out on this? Exactly. And when you look at faith, and if you're balancing the scales of faith and no faith, there has to be things in our life and our walk with God that tips the scale to faith, right? And I think one of those, and probably the most important one of those, is prayer. It's like one guy said, he said, if Jesus prayed, I need to pray. Yeah. You know, end of conversation. But you take the human side of us, and we struggle with it. We struggle with whether or not God's listening. Be honest, you know, is God listening about it? We struggle with, is God going to answer my prayer?
And how important is it to God? That sometimes we get in the way of, we wonder, because it's not that important to us, or it may not be that important to you. We think it may not be important to God, but it is. And we just don't look at it as a human view of it, not his view.
Yeah. And when we talked about, when we did our study on prayer in here, and I said, one of the things from the prayer I have such, I mean, difficult, I guess is the right word for this, is understanding as you pray for these young children. That's the part I don't understand. I'm sorry. I don't. I sometimes have a problem with that. I do. I just do.
What do you mean you don't?
If they pass away.
Oh, yes.
They
yeah.
pass away at a young age and so on.
I think of Elizabeth, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so you look at that, and you know, there's the part of you that understands the reward and understands heaven and all that, but there's still that, there's just that oomph that sometimes. But let's take a look. So Jesus gives us, in this text that we're going to read, Jesus gives us five reasons why we shouldn't give up on prayer, right? And I want to look at that. So let's start out with a text. And so read along in your copy, and starting with chapter 18, verse 1. Then he spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart. Now that the Greek word for ought in some of the newer translations says must. They might have a translation that uses something other than ought to pray. lots of the newer ones. Should always pray. Yeah. Yep. Saying, there is a certain city, a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. Now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice from me, from my adversary. And he would not for a while, but afterwards he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. Then the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said, and shall God not avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on earth? And we're going to address that last question a little bit longer. So now, a little background on this, a little historical background. Judges in early Jerusalem was kind of like the tax collectors. They could be bought off for just about anything. So the judge circuit was a judge that was usually approved through the Sanhedrin or the Pharisees. And this judge would go around with his entourage in a tent and literally go around from the little areas, the little towns, the little communities around. He had a circuit, and he would hear these people and pass judgment on them against or for or whatever the situation was. So there was two people in early biblical times in Jerusalem that had zero status in society. And that was a woman, and the worst one was a widow woman. And you know, in Acts, the Christians, actually the early Christians, was the one that really started taking up for the widow women especially. So they had none. So this had a big impact on the story that he was telling the disciples, to not only see that you know, that fervent prayer was needed, but here Jesus is even taking it a bigger step and using not only a female, but a widow woman who actually comes to the judge repeatedly. So for them to do that, she would have had to follow this judge around, is the picture Jesus is painting. Not only was she going to court each day, but she's probably doing it in a different community each time. So the woman's persistence was really big. It was much more than just coming back to the judge, you know, four or five times, whatever the number was. It was very, 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 very unheard of and very, very persistent to follow that around. I mean, the picture Jesus painted, literally her sleeping on the ground, so to speak, to have that done. So let's look at these five things. All right. So number one, we shouldn't give up because there's too much at stake. Dr. Luke doesn't leave us guessing at the point where Jesus intends to make. Then he spoke a parable to them that men always ought or must or need to pray and not lose heart. So let me ask you this. What if, and we've always been taught this, and we talked about this a lot in here, if we're taught that when we go to God, and we asked for forgiveness of one of our sins, we've been taught you only have to have forgiveness one time, assuming that you don't keep repeating that sin, right? But you're forgiven with one request. You don't have to keep going back and asking for that. What's the difference in that and prayer?
Yes. I don't really like this parable.
You don't really like what?
This parable is kind of... If you're not a mature Christian, this parable can throw you off. I mean, I've read this parable a bunch of times, and this parable can leave people kind of off. Like, I mean, to start with, you got to understand that he's talking about a judge here that doesn't respect God and doesn't like man. Mm-hmm. Well, that's opposite of God. So a lot of people don't realize that. But I think this parable is to show us right the opposite of the parable. I mean, you know, this is nothing like God, you know.
Well, prayer isn't always About asking for things. I mean, that's just a small part of prayer.
Should be.
Well, it should, yes.
And should be.
Yeah. But
should be.
It's about your spirit. Your spirit in the
heart. Let me ask you a question. All right. So let me ask you something. All right. Because I tried to figure out how I wanted to go with this. So let me paint you a picture. So let's say on day one, whatever day one is, you pray to God for whatever this is, somebody to be healed, somebody to be saved, whatever this prayer is on day one. Somewhere out in the future, and I'm gonna say this with a few ifs and ands, but my goal is going to be somewhere out in the future, if it's in God's will, that prayer will be answered. Maybe not in the way you wanted it, but right. But that prayer may be answered. So let's say day one in whatever time in the future, if that's day 500 or day 1,000 or day 10 or whatever that number is, what happens in there in the meantime with you? What happens with you in that meantime?
You're probably continuously praying about that same thing.
So what's happening with you, though? What's happening with you if you're in fervent prayer with God? Now, that doesn't mean that's the only prayer you pray during that time, but that may be part of your prayer during that time. So if something in your life or someone is that important to you that you pray, and we all believe in prayer, I mean, assuming we all believe in prayer, what happens to you during that time period?
Well, hopefully your relationship with Christ is growing.
Right, yeah. But let me ask you this, though. If you, and you're saying here, you're saying continuously praying, and I know Paul says that too, I think, in Colossians or Corinthians 1, continuous peace, without ceasing for all things. Then it says also too, like you said just now, once you ask for forgiveness of your sins, so we're saying there's two different prayers. There's a forgiveness prayer and there's a prayer for asking for help for somebody or intercessory prayer and a forgiveness prayer. Is that, I mean, that's what that's what I kind of get about when you read this parable. Is I know it says once forgiven, always forgiven. You don't have to keep. You ask and bring it up and ask it, you know. But we do, and because in some of us it here, you know, and it says just finding word. Well, we don't wire God down. I mean, he's saying this widow wore the guy down. He just said, "Hey, take it, do it." You know, that's not the way it works.
No, and you don't wear God down.
No, that's
not the point. So. Why does God want us to pray? So let's look at a couple of things here for that. So number one, if that in that time period, in that whatever that time period is, use your own time period. If we're praying to God and we have a fervent prayer life, and that whatever you're praying for is inside that prayer life, don't you think that helps you stay focused on God?
Oh yeah, every time you're praying, that's your focus.
So if you have a prayer that you're fervent about, whatever that prayer is, won't that keep you more focused each time that you pray? So persistent prayer will keep you focused more on your walk with God, or keep you focused more on who God is? Or is it the same?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. One guy wrote, he says, Jesus said men always must pray, as it's translated in the King James Version, not faint. The meaning seems clear. The choice is ours. If we don't pray, we can lose heart. All right. Who among us has not felt as our prayers have not been answered or effective, all that? So, but perhaps the question should be this: what happens when we give up? George Mueller, founder of a Christian orphanage in England, 1800s, he said he knew the importance of prayer, even when the answer seemed delayed. He said when he was a young man, he began praying that two of his friends might be saved. He prayed for them for more than 60 years. One of the men was converted shortly before his death. That was probably the last service that Mueller held. The other was saved within a year of his death. What would you think if Mueller had given up? Would that have made a difference?
Well, in his life, because it may have pulled, it may have pulled him away from God. You know, so.
Like a yeah. So let's look at these two characters in here. Let's think about that. Let's look at these two characters. Number one's the judge, all right? He's a sweet guy. You know, he's the judge. Yeah, right, yeah. So today we would have said about that judge, he could care less. He could care less. I used to have a guy that I used to hang out to years and years and years ago. He was pretty rough. He used to have a saying, he says, I don't care if it rains, right straight up. I guess that's pretty much you don't care, right? But so he says, today we said he does not care. The judge that the widow had to face made a Judge Wapner look like Prince Charming. And as far as the possibility of getting justice under his ruling was not going to happen. To understand the story, we have to understand this setting that I was talking about. The courtroom was not this fine building. It's just, you have to understand what all goes on here. Said one guy wrote, and he said, anybody could watch the proceedings from the outside as this went on, but only those who were approved and accepted could have had their cases tried. This usually meant bribing one of the assistants that would call the judge's attention to the case. Right? So this judge was so crooked that that nothing really fazed him except money, more than likely.
And the widow probably didn't have
any. And did not have any money. But she had her persistence. All right? So stay with that just a minute. So we shouldn't give up because too much is at stake. Number two, don't give up when circumstances seem to be against you. So the next character we get into is the widow. Now, the widow woman's the city she came from saying, get justice to me for my adversary. And Jesus doesn't tell us what was wrong. But the fact that we know she was a widow woman was like the second lower, the top lower rung or top, the lower rung on the ladder about anybody. All right. As hopeless as her situation to have seemed, she was persistent. The language of verse 3 indicates that every day she begged for him to help. One guy wrote, he said, the language leaves open the possibility of confrontation everywhere, not just in the court. In other words, she saw him walking down the street. She saw him when he was eating dinner. She saw him, you know.
He was a stalker.
Exactly. Exactly. He said, you see, her only option was to keep asking the judge to help her. She had no other alternative. But the same token, I don't think we ever really pray and especially keep our prayer until we come to the place of complete desperation. In other words, oh, nothing else worked.
Yeah.
Let me pray.
Yeah.
Right? Don't give up when circumstances seem to be against you. Number three, don't give up. The answer may be just around the corner. Verse 4 tells us that he became weary of his constant, he became weary of her constant petitions. And he would not for a while, but afterwards he said with himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this will troubles me, I will avenge her, lest her continual coming, she wearies me. John Wesley wrote a diary, and it's been published several times and many excerpts from it. But listen to this excerpt from this diary. This is amazing. It doesn't say what town this in. But listen to his diary. This is his entries in his diary. And I don't know the year, but Sunday morning, May 5th, preached in St. Anne's. I was asked not to come back anymore. Sunday p.m., May 5th, preached at St. John's. The deacon said, get out and stay out. Sunday, May 12th, preached at St. Jude's. Can't go back there either. Sunday, May 12th, p.m., preached at St. George. Kicked out again. Sunday a.m., May 19th, preached at St. Somebody Else's. I can't remember the name. The deacons called a special meeting, said I couldn't return. Sunday p.m., May 19th, preached on the street, kicked off the street, told me not to come back again. Sunday, May 26th, preached in a meadow, chased out a meadow as a bull was turned loose during the services. Sunday, June the 2nd, preached out of the edge of town, kicked off the highway. Sunday p.m., June the 2nd, afternoon service, preached in a pasture, 10,000 people came.
His persistence, he didn't give up. He just kept on.
Yep. 10,000 people came. Wow. Don't give up. Answer may be around the corner. Number four, don't give up. God's working out the answer. I think that's where we lose. I don't want to say lose faith. That's a bad term. We lose patience.
We get tired. You just have to know that in the end, God has what is best for you. And you just have to hang on to that.
Regardless
mm-hmm.
of how we should.
You know, I told you one time, I said, the worst counselors for people that are going through a divorce is the people that still marry. I think it's always different for the people going through it than the people not going through it. And until you're in that situation, it's hard to understand what a trial on you is when you're praying for something so fervently and you want it, you want it to come true so bad. You know,
I think about that song Garth Brooks sang, some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. Sometimes when we pray for stuff, if we pray for stuff we don't need, or it's not good for us.
Yep.
My God, it didn't seem like God's answering it.
I think that's why it's important to include God's will. In your life.
You know, one of the commentaries on this, and I forgot which commentary I was reading. I think it might have been McDonald was talking about it. And he said, if you were praying for somebody's salvation, one of the prayers that needs to be answered is for you to have the strength to talk to that person.
Mm-hmm. The boldness.
So it's not. Sometimes the prayer that needs to be answered is that prayer for you to have the strength and the confidence or whatever you're looking for to go talk to that person. That's the prayer that needs to be answered but that's not the prayer you pray. You pray for that person to be saved, right? Interesting. Number four, don't give up. God's working out the answer, right? Don't make the mistake of equating delay with denial. In verse 7, Jesus makes the application, and shall God not avenge his own elect to cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? And, you know, that's actually addressed in Revelations as the people under the altar of God is crying out for, you know, to have their deaths avenged. Yeah. All down through the centuries, one guy wrote, believers have struggled with the seeming silence of God in their prayers. In verse 8, Jesus says this, I will tell you, he will avenge him speedily. Here, Jesus said, God answers all pleas of justice and does so quickly. Sometimes quickly, I guess, in God's eyes, and not quickly in our eyes, right? The moment that God hears our request, if it's in his will, he begins to work out the answer. It may not see now, but one day the answer will come. It was a poster one time, and it was the prayer, and I forgot what the prayer was now. I can't remember if it was for somebody to be saved. I think somebody to be saved or something like that. And it was like all of these prayers that God had to answer, and it got all the way down the bottom, and this one person that was like was nowhere in the picture was saved, and that person was affected to the person up here. Mm-hmm. And brought them to Christ. So the point of it was, you may have a prayer today, but you don't see the thousand other things that has to happen before that prayer comes in. Yeah. Another story. I love stories. All right. Roger Sims was hitchhiking home, and he said, never forget the date, May 7th. He says, his heavy suitcase made me tired. I was anxious to take off my army uniform once and for all. Flashing back the hitchhiking sign, the oncoming cars, he lost hope, and he saw this big, black, sleek Cadillac pull up. To his surprise, the car stopped, the door opened. Slid in the front seat with the guy, and the guy asked him, he says, going home for keeps? He said, sure am. He says, well, you're in luck if you're going to Chicago. And he says, not that quite far. He said, do you live in Chicago? He said, I have a business there. He said, my name is Hanover. He said, after talking about many things, Roger, a Christian, felt a compulsion to witness to this 50-ish guy, apparently successful businessman, about Christ. He said, but he kept putting it off. He said, finally, he said, he cleared his throat, and he said, Mr. Hanover, I'd like to talk to you about something very important. He said, he proceeded to explain the way of salvation, ultimately asking Mr. Hanover if he would like to receive Christ. He said, to his astonishment, the Cadillac pulled over the side of the road. Roger thought he was going to be ejected from the car. He said, the man bowed his head and received Christ then and there. He says, the greatest thing that has ever happened to me, Roger said. He said, 5 years went by. He later married. He had a two-year-old boy and a business of his own, and it took him into Chicago. He said he found a small white business that had the name of the card that he gave him, Mr. Hanover. He said a receptionist told him it was impossible to see Mr. Hanover, but he could see Mrs. Hanover. He said, a little confused what's going on, so he went into this office and found her. He said, a very keen-eyed woman in her late 50s, said, extended her hand. She said, you knew my husband, asked him. Roger told her how the husband had given him a ride hitchhiking one day. And he says, can you tell me when that was? He said, I know exactly when it was. He said, it was May 7th, 5 years ago. She said, I was discharged from the Army that day. She said, Roger said, anything special about that day? She says, yes. She said, very special. She says, he said, since he had come that far, he might as well take the plunge and ask her too. He said, Miss Hanover, I explained the gospel. He pulled over to the side of the road, wept on the steering wheel, and he gave his life to Christ that day. Said she began crying just profusely. She said, finally getting her act together, she said, I had prayed for my husband's salvation for years. I believe God was saving. She says, where is your husband, Miss Hanover, now? I'd like to talk to him. She said, I'm sorry. I said, he's dead. She said, he was in a car crash right after he let you out of the car.
She didn't know he'd gotten saved.
Yeah. And she said, I thought that God had never kept my promise. She said, I've stopped living for years and years and years for God because I thought he was never saved.
Wow. This is a true story?
That's a true story.
Wow.
Yeah. True story. Don't ever give up working out the answer. Number five, did Jesus give up on his promises? Jesus concludes with a question. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on earth? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Why does Jesus want us to be persistent in prayer? Because prayer demonstrates faith. What we were talking about a while ago. This is really what Jesus is after. Without faith, prayer becomes a little more than a ritual that we perform and then stand in wonder, waiting on it to happen. So when our prayer is answered, we're amazed. In the book of Acts, chapter 12, Peter, remember, he was in prison and for preaching. And he says the church was in constant prayer and made offer to God to him by the church. And you can imagine, I'm sure there was. And they were so astonished, they wouldn't even let him in because they couldn't believe it was him knocking at the door, right? So notice Jesus does not say if the Son of Man comes, but when the Son of Man comes. He said, Jesus is saying it something like this, a guy wrote. He says, you can count on the fact I'll return just as I've said I would. And when I do, will bring the justice that I have promised. Therefore, don't concern yourself with whether I fulfill my promises, but rather when you will be found faithful when I return. What needs to concern ourselves is the Lord's faithfulness rather than our own. Jesus encouraged us to his disciples to pray and not give up, and is still relevant to us. When this guy wrote that had the Ted Turner thing, he said, we can be like Ted Turner and either turn from a life of faith because of unanswered prayer, or it can be like the widow persistent in asking what she needed. For unlike the widow who had pleaded for justice, we as followers of Jesus are God's children who have his ear at all times. Unlike the widow who had no one to plead her case to, Jesus' followers have advocated in heaven. The last one the guy wrote, he says, we really face with a choice between praying or losing heart. He said, I'm going with keeping heart and not giving up on God. And, you know, one thing I thought was really interesting about this parable, and it really didn't get brought out in anything I read. But so at the point when the widow came to the judge, do you think that was her last straw?
Yes.
I think it was too. I think she had nowhere else to turn. She couldn't fix her problem either way, and she had nowhere else to turn.
Think she had prayed though?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I don't think she had prayed till she came to the judge.
I think that's what that parable is all about in the beginning of it too. Yeah. That's the reason he asked that question on the end because of that lady. I don't think she had any faith either. One, she went to that judge, and two, you gotta remember too, probably that judge, not you. Because he said he didn't have any respect for men or for God.
Yeah, and probably a Gentile.
Too, I think the Jews, and she may not have been either, because I think whatever before and back in those times, if you had a dispute against someone, you didn't go to a judge, you went to the elders, didn't you? Well, I think the elders, just Jewish elders, all did the dispute between people. They didn't go to court like that. So probably both almost pagans.
Yeah.
You know. But I think it's kind of misleading to you really realize that what he's, I think what Jesus is telling us is don't be like, God's nothing like that judge.
He's yeah.
Completely opposite. You know, because that starts off saying, don't fear God, doesn't love man. Well, God's right the opposite. And he loves us. I mean, this judge right here didn't love anybody from what it sounds like. God's right the opposite. And we, like you said, right at the end, we have an intercessor. Jesus said, right hand, interceding for us all the time.
Now, there was a couple of commentaries that talked about that here's a woman that's going to the judge with no other hope. And we do have the hope.
Yep.
And it's almost like the opposite of this is where, yeah, that's where Jesus is.
I think somebody that's not a real mature Christian reads that until they really, to get right there to the end of it where it says, if, you know, if, how much more is God going to care for you? If, you know, this judge finally hears that woman's plea,
yeah.
How much more is God going to care for you to really love him and put his faith in him? But I think that's what he says there, Dan, when he asked that question. How many people is going to be like that woman on earth when he comes back?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think absolutely.
He's asking that question. How many people is going to be like that woman?
All right, guys, I'm going to end the recording.